It's Monday, March 22nd. If you thought Don't Come to the U.S. was going to work, spend a weekend on the Rio Grande. We start here. As children cross the border faster than we can house them, the Secretary of Homeland Security says, but we told them not to.
So did you come here because Joe Biden was elected president?
Basically.
As the crisis quickly gets worse, our team traveled across, along, and above the border to get the clearest view.
Skip that curfew. We all here.
What happens when you tell people to spread out and they just say no?
Sirens were blaring and they fired pepper balls at one point.
Miami just went from spring break to spring broken. And the days of national COVID spikes got to be behind us, right?
This is the third time that Paris has gone through a lockdown.
Well, they're not in Europe. As countries go back into lockdown, could we be next? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
I, Alejandro Mayorkas.
I, Alejandro Mayorkas.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support.
The new Secretary of Homeland Security in this country, Alejandro Mayorkas, he was confirmed on February 2nd, 2 weeks after President Biden was inaugurated. Well, this past Friday, he made his first trip as secretary to the border between the U.S. and Mexico.
And joining me now is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. Good morning, Mr. Secretary.
On Sunday, yesterday, right he there. Sat down to speak we with ABC News. Well, on just the day between these two events, on that Saturday, another 600 unaccompanied children crossed the border into the U.S. That is what the rolling average has become, 600 kids a day. That does not count adults and families.
There were babies who hadn't crawled in weeks because there was nowhere for mothers to put them down. It means a disaster.
And remember, kids are not supposed to stay by themselves in DHS custody for more than 3 days. They're supposed to go to Health and Human Services, something more kid-friendly. But DHS is only managing to process a fraction of these children every day, meaning as of this weekend, there were nearly 1,000 minors who had been in these facilities for 10 days or more. This issue is compounding itself every single day.
Tell me about your journey from Guatemala.
And so rather just one interview, one check-in, one quick trip, ABC's chief global affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz pulled out all the stops. She and several correspondents spent the weekend on either side of the border interviewing officials, advocates, and of course, the people that are making this dangerous trip increasingly by the thousands. Martha Raddatz joins us now. She's heading back home as we speak. Where are you, Martha?
I am in the Dallas airport between flights, waiting for a connecting flight to D.C.
Well, good. Then we'll make this quick. Hey, we started last week by talking about just how overwhelming this has become, and yet it's become even more overwhelming, right? Well, what does this crisis look like up close?
It becomes more overwhelming every single day, Brad, every single minute.
Well, right now we're watching two vehicles that arrived on the Mexican side with about five or six individuals. Two individuals have already walked upriver.
We spread out throughout the border, and all of our crews saw people crossing the river.
The individual that was carrying that little boy, had they slipped or whatever, what chances do you think that little boy is going to have? Not much.
With their children, with nothing other than what they could carry.
And then the next step, they'll go to the Border Patrol station that we passed on the way up here. They'll be processed.
When I went into Mexico, there was a family that had gone over the river and then had been sent back to Mexico because they said they weren't eligible for asylum.
And that's every day?
That's every day.
For the last, how long?
Now the last 30, 40 days.
One of the starkest things to see is the border and the border wall from the air. And we were in a helicopter with Arizona Public Safety Department, the Rangers, the rescue and recovery guys.
So we'll go out and look for people that have crossed over the border that have gotten in distress due to dehydration, medical emergencies, falls, whatever.
You can just see how fierce and ferocious and desolate that earth is when you fly over it. We were flying at about 100 feet, and you can see where the wall ended, because that was also something that ended immediately under Joe Biden.
These are what's left of these rickety makeshift ladders that migrants use to get over the wall. And this is what they'll do. They'll
bend this rebar, and they'll use it like a grappling hook, slinging it over the other side of the wall, and then scramble down here on the U.S. side.
And there's really no evidence or hard evidence that that extra wall, those 400-something miles, added to the protection. But what they did have as well is surveillance, lights, and that's what upsets the local sheriffs and the Customs and Border Protection, because they also lost that.
And why did you leave Brazil? Why did you want to take your family out of Brazil?
Well, there's a lot of violence down there in this time right now.
What I was struck by most of all, after hearing Republicans complain about Joe Biden and how did this happen, and some Democrats complain about how did this happen.
So did you come here because Joe Biden was elected president?
Basically.
People who I spoke to said quite clearly they came because they thought Joe Biden was opening up the borders and welcoming them.
Biden promised that we can cross with minors.
Would you have tried to do this when Donald Trump was president?
Definitely not.
Specifically, they said they wouldn't have come if Donald Trump was still president. So the Biden administration really has a problem on its hand if they can't get this message out stronger.
And just so we're clear, like, there is always a surge around this time of year. You're saying, like, the weather's better, but you're saying that that does not account for what we're seeing here.
There is always a surge around the weather, and there's probably more of a surge because the borders have opened up since, as COVID is dissipating in some places. But they could have planned for this.
Why were you not prepared for this?
Martha, let me be clear. We have seen large numbers of migration in the past. We know how to address it. We have a plan. We are executing on our plan.
Joe Biden immediately said, we're not doing this anymore. We're not doing this Remain in Mexico protocols. But instead of having a plan in place, they just assumed that it would be okay.
When people speak of, well, you knew of this, plans aren't made at 20,000 feet. Plans are contracts, personnel, policies, training.
Secretary Mayorkas was very clear. They will have a plan. They do have a plan. We'll look back and in retrospect think it all worked out.
The message is quite clear. Do not come. The border is closed. The border is secure.
But right now, it is a crisis, especially when you have that many children, unaccompanied minors, in conditions they just absolutely should not be in. And I think some of those tents we're seeing on the border and are probably the best of places, because those who are not in those tents, where they are trying to at least cater to the age group, others are in basically jail cells.
Right. Yeah. And the Biden administration is saying, look, if the problem is processing people quickly, well, the Trump administration intentionally took steps to slow how these processes work, which now we're trying to rebuild. But Martha, you said it yourself. It has not gotten fixed in 2 months. I wonder if another 1 month is going to make a difference. So what is the plan to house these people?
Do me a favor and help move that luggage this way. This luggage.
They're trying to open up. They're opening up the convention center in Dallas. They're opening up several other areas for these migrants. But this is getting worse every day.
What it looks like are children standing up with nowhere to sit down. Children who can't all lay down at the same time or can't lay down at all.
When they open up one place, that's going to fill up, and they're going to have to find another place to house these children.
Anyone that extra or left over would be street released in Yuma.
And you street might, release, meaning just, you you're
know,
on your own.
You're on your own.
Come There's, back to court when your asylum day.
Come to court in Louisiana, Florida in 14 days. You know.
They are also releasing a lot of the migrants and saying, okay, go on your way. You'll have an asylum hearing. Promise you'll come back. And that is also a huge, not only a problem for Joe Biden on its face, but a political problem.
Governor, I just want you to set the stage for us and what you've seen here in Arizona in the last few months.
Well, the Biden administration is obviously anti-wall, and they're AWOL, absent without leave, on our border.
There is not a Republican I talked to or a sheriff in a conservative county who did not say, Joe Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden.
He should be talking to President Obrador. He should be talking to the leaders of the Northern Triangle. He's got a big microphone. He needs to use it appropriately.
They are making this a huge political blunder as well as a humanitarian disaster.
Well, and that was kind of my last question for you, Martha, because just on a gut level, like you and your crews were there at the border as officials are with you and just pointing to people at the river's edge being like, oh, there's another family coming. Oh, look, there's another family coming. Like, and I think a natural reaction is like, well, stop them. Like, someone go over there and like, don't let if we think they're walking into a crisis situation, making it worse, don't let them in. And yet it's far too many people, I suppose, to think that way about, let alone the moral issue of what their lives are like.
It's way too many people to handle. And the fences and the walls, if you have people in such desperate situations, and we saw so many getting off buses and rounded up and taken to these really amazing shelters that are run purely by donations, the Catholic Charity shelter that we went to, and they just have no place to go, they say. They are absolutely desperate.
So you walked across the shallow part of the river.
And they will do anything to get over here. They bring their children.
What I want is to give my sons the opportunity.
They don't want their children to be harmed on this journey.
Unfortunately, I have 3 sons and my husband passed away. And I want them a better future for them.
But they think the situation in their homeland is so bad that even risking their lives is better than staying and facing possible death.
Why do you think the message to the migrants telling them to stay home, to don't come now, why do you think that hasn't resonated yet? What more can be done, sir?
A lot more. We're in the process of doing it now, including making.
Right, you can see this every day becoming more real, a bigger source of frustration for the Biden administration, because when the president returned from Camp David last night, one of the first things out of his mouth was more can be done to convince people not to come here in the first place. If it took Mayorkas a month and a half to get his tour, Biden has still not visited, and our cameras are still not being allowed inside. Martha Raddatz, though, great reporting at the border. We'll let you catch your flight. See you soon.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, welcome to Miami. Curfew's at 8. We're back in a bit.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Recently, I saw a Facebook comment from an acquaintance saying, I feel like I'm the only person I know who hasn't gotten a vaccine shot yet. To which my advice is generally, I don't know, meet more people. 3 out of 4 people in this country have not gotten a single vaccine shot yet. But this sentiment is the worrisome thing, right? Because if young, healthy-ish people are getting frustrated now, Well, guess what? They're still 5 weeks away from the date President Biden has promised they will be eligible for a vaccine.
We begin tonight with breaking news, a state of emergency in Miami Beach.
And this weekend, we saw what happens when, after a year of restrictions, crowds just stop caring what the police are telling them. This is the sound of a party in Miami Beach, Florida, being broken up by police. And it's one of several gatherings in recent days in which enforcing COVID measures has actually resembled something more like a SWAT team event. ABC's Victor Oquendo is based in Miami. Victor, I mean, what kind of parties are we talking here? How many people?
Big ones, Brad. I'd say big parties in general. Thousands of people have started lining up all along Miami Beach's famed Ocean Drive and a couple of streets beyond that. These are the areas that they call the Entertainment District on Miami Beach. And for weeks now, the crowds have just been growing and growing.
Oh my God.
And over the course of the weekend, this all came together Saturday afternoon, and Miami Beach residents were caught off guard as well. Basically, there is an 8 p.m. curfew in that entertainment district, and a lot of people, I'm guessing, simply didn't just know. They had about 4 hours notice. So police, I mean, they were done. Sirens were blaring, and they fired pepper balls at one point. Fired pepper balls, clearing these crowds out. And on top of that, they are really choking the three causeways to get onto Miami Beach.
At night, there is no question that it becomes a place that feels a little bit out of control or a lot out of control.
This cell phone video showing a restaurant with tables turned over and broken chairs. The group here dining without paying for their checks.
And police were checking every single car as it came in. And unless you were a resident of Miami Beach or you could prove that you were staying at a hotel or you're an employee here, you were not allowed access to Miami Beach. So those are the measures they're taking right now to limit the crowd sizes here, the violence, and these crazy scenes that have been playing out through the weekend.
Wow. And because, Victor, I was about to say, you can say don't congregate all you want, but I'm just imagining like the sunk costs here. If some kid is like paid for an airplane ticket, he's gotten a hotel room, he's gone on a bar crawl or three because everything's fully open, like, have you already lost the battle with that person? I guess you're saying, no, if you can control, like, the bridges and the it sounds like a military operation, what you're describing.
And what you're describing sounds like a typical spring break, but we need to keep in mind that, for the most part, these are not college students.
We love Miami.
Yeah,
we
out here.
I'm from Boston.
Oh, I'm from New York.
Yes, sir. 4 hours away.
Yeah, I'm from New York. Here.
You're not seeing here. A lot of the university attire around here. No, these are mostly full-grown adults.
Skip that curfew. We out here. We out here. No sleep, period.
They're on vacation, and they're coming to Miami Beach because it's warm. COVID restrictions have been long gone for a while now, and they know that this is a hot spot this time of year.
Which is part of the draw as well, it sounds like. And like that's been part of the tension between the like governor and local officials is this is one of the few places in the country where you can go and just party.
Exactly. And that's what's been happening, and it's gotten out of control.
So what's your message to people traveling to South Florida right now?
Listen, first of all, there's a pandemic, but more than that, if you're coming here because you think this is a place to go to let loose and do whatever you want, please don't come here. But we're not in anything goes destination.
Because in the middle of these large crowds, sure enough, with enough alcohol, violence breaks out. We've seen more than 1,000 arrests since the beginning of spring break. City leaders have declared this state of emergency, and they've now voted to extend these really strict measures through at least April 12th.
Hey, last question, Victor, and I know you're not a doctor, but what's the conversation about, like, as to whether these big gatherings actually will lead to major outbreaks? Because, like, the governor, Ron DeSantis, has basically said, listen, we kept our businesses open, we kept our schools open, and health-wise, you know what, actually, we did equal or even better than some of the more stringent states, and guess what, our unemployment rate didn't shoot through the roof. So, like, should we be super concerned about a big viral outbreak in Miami?
Well, you're right. I'm not a doctor here, but what I can tell you is that all along the research has showed that as long as you're doing the majority of your activities outside and you social distance when you can, you'll be okay. However, I'm not seeing any social distancing here.
We're standing right on 8th and Ocean, and take a look at these crowds.
And there's also that concern with all of these huge crowds. Sure, a lot of young people here.
It's over here.
If they get COVID, it might not be as bad as if somebody who's a little more susceptible, perhaps a little bit older. But if they were to get it and then bring it back home to wherever it is they live, you have people coming here from all over the world, that could lead to a real problem.
Florida leads the country in cases of the UK variant.
And we just learned from HHS that Miami had the highest test positivity rate of large metro areas, of any large major cities, in the last week. So that's not a good sign, Brad.
Yeah, and just unbelievable scenes really coming out of there from Miami in what you would normally expect to be pretty much like, hey, everyone, you've had your fun, go home. But during the middle of a pandemic, as these case rates go upwards, Victor Oquendo in Miami. Thank you.
You got it.
That question that we talked about with Victor, does this lead to a spike in cases? That is going to be the biggest life or death question for Americans in the next several weeks. Whether by vaccinations or by good old-fashioned social distancing and mask wearing, can we be patient enough to avoid another nationwide surge in COVID cases? In other words, can we avoid what Europe is going through this morning? Over the weekend, multiple European countries went back into lockdown because COVID-19 is actually spreading there faster and faster, vaccine or not. ABC's Inés de la Quatara is based in Paris. And Inés, I mean, when France says it's locked down, that's more hardcore of a lockdown than we think of, right? How bad is it there?
Yeah, it's much worse than what you and I were used to in the U.S., but it's not as bad as previous lockdowns have been in Paris. So this is the third time that Paris has gone through a lockdown, and this lockdown is slightly more lenient. So you can't stray more than 6 miles from your home. When you do leave your home, you have to fill out some kind of form explaining why you're leaving your house. And there is a curfew, a 7 p.m. curfew. That's the big thing here. So past 7 p.m., everybody has to be home. The day that the French prime minister announced this new lockdown, France saw 35,000 new COVID-19 cases in just 24 hours. So that is huge. Hospitals in the Paris region have also been under lots of stress. ICUs filling up. Patients at those hospitals have had to be transported to hospitals outside of the Paris region because there are just fewer and fewer beds.
Italy, learning half the country will go into lockdown starting Monday, including Rome and Venice. Schools, all restaurants, bars and non-essential stores to close through Easter.
All across the continent, you're seeing cases surging and you're seeing COVID fatigue across the continent.
It's our choice. It's our choice at the end of the day, and that's what they're doing. They're taking our freedoms away.
We saw this weekend, you know, a number of protests all over.
These are enemies of the people.
From Austria to Finland, Romania, Switzerland, Germany saw 20,000 people protesting on Saturday.
This crowd in London surrounding police, hurling objects at them, at times engaging in hand-to-hand combat.
And then in London as well, where, you know, I thought that was interesting because Britain has been doing pretty well in terms of getting people vaccinated, but they're also seeing a number of protests there.
Well, is part of the rationale for these protests, Inés, like, hey, we've got a vaccine now, by the way. Like, you can't just keep us locked down for years at a time. Like, this is not going to be as bad as the others.
I think there's a little bit of that. There certainly is frustration with, you know, we have vaccines. Why are more vaccines not getting into people's arms?
Are you nervous at all to take a new vaccine?
I feel like there's definitely question marks around it. And I know there's been some negative things around it all, so I probably need to read around it myself.
There is vaccine hesitancy, and that's something that officials here have really been struggling with. But it's the vaccine issue is a complicated issue, but I mean, Europe is lagging in terms of getting shots into people's arms.
Wait, how much are they lagging in it? Like in the U.S., about 25% of Americans have gotten at least one dose. So that's a quarter of Americans, at least one dose. The U.K. is really focusing on that first dose. So it's like 40% of Brits have one dose. What is it in a country like France?
Only about 10% of Europeans have received their first dose. So it's huge. You know, I think one of the main reasons people are pointing to are the fact that EU regulators took so long to approve the vaccine, any vaccine.
This is exactly what happened in Europe. They're generally 3 or 4 weeks ahead of us.
in the dynamics of their outbreak, and they saw the same thing. They plateaued, and then they started to take off. And we're seeing that in a few of the states, not all the states.
But, Brad, regardless of how many people are getting vaccinated, scientists say that there's still, you know, these kinds of surges are still possible because of the new variants we're seeing, the Brazil variant, the South Africa variant. So they're urging people to remain, you know, socially distanced and to continue following guidelines and to just be careful even if they're vaccinated.
Right, where you see lockdowns like this continuing into 2021, even as we're heralding these new vaccines all over the world. All right, Inés de la Quintana, there in Paris. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And one last thing. If you've been waiting 2 years for upsets, you got your upsets. This weekend, March Madness returned with even more madness than usual. By the end of round one, several top teams had been toppled. Texas fell to their tiny in-state neighbors Abilene Christian. The sports giant Ohio State lost to Oral Roberts University. Their most well-known alumnus is probably the televangelist Joel Osteen.
Another fairy tale ride is underway for Loyola Chicago.
And Little Loyola Chicago beat their in-state rivals, the big University of Illinois, who were among the favorites to win it all. And you might remember Loyola Chicago becoming one of the most improbable Cinderella teams in history a few years ago when they somehow reached the Final Four. Well, a lot of people credited the prayers of the little nun who accompanied them, Sister Jean. Guess who was back in the arena this year, fully vaccinated?
Their 101-year-old superfan kicking off today's game with a pregame prayer saying, quote, "We hope to score early and make our opponents nervous." It seems her prayer was answered.
But for all the talk of this bubble format, COVID has already wreaked some havoc. Virginia Commonwealth University had to forfeit their first game when team members tested positive. The biggest upset of the weekend, though, was not an upset on the floor. It was people being upset.
I got something to show y'all.
That's Sedona Prince. She's playing for Oregon in the women's NCAA tournament. And in a quick video, she compared the weight training room that had been built at the men's facilities to the one built for the women in San Antonio.
This is our weight room.
She is pointing at a single rack of dumbbells. It's like the size of a traffic cone. That was the weight room. That and some yoga mats.
Now, when pictures of our weight room got released versus the men's, the NCAA came out with a statement saying that it wasn't money, it was space that was a problem. Let me show y'all something else. Here's our practice court, right? And then here's that weight room. And then here's all this extra space.
Perhaps even worse, it turned out that the women were being administered different COVID tests to keep everyone safe. In Indy, men were getting PCR swab tests. They called them the gold standard. In San Antonio, the women were getting what doctors call faster but less reliable antigen tests. The NCAA says it sees no difference in the test, but it did scramble at least to get some nicer weight rooms. The women's tournament started just last night, a little bit more reliable so far than the men's tourney. Fewer upsets, that is music to the ears of teams like Stanford, who are favored to win it all there. Hey, if you're enjoying this show, open up your podcast app, search for Start Here, and maybe do a quick rating and review. Like, you could do it right now. 30 seconds for you, huge difference for us, plus just nice to see you. Nice to know that I'm talking to real, actual humans. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.